Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 314. Why, yes, I do own an 8-inch tart pan. Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Support for this podcast comes from my supporters on Ko-Fi, and you can find links to that on my website. This episode contains the following segments: On the Porch, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and a special announcement about an upcoming Advent puzzle exchange. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me. I am recording this episode on Sunday, July 16th for later release. It's a rainy, dreary, humid day here near Delaware Water Gap, Pennsylvania, and I thought I would take this opportunity to get a little extra recording done because I have a workshop, a fiber workshop, coming up at nearby Peters Valley, and Samuel and I are enjoying our vacation in Provincetown very soon as well. So I thought I'd get this episode recorded with some important information and just some updates on how my making has been going, and then get it ready for a July 23rd release. Peters Valley is an artist's enclave and workshop location that is about 40 minutes from my home. There are workshops as far ranging as blacksmithing, photography, the fine arts like oils and watercolors, jewelry making, as well as the fiber arts. And though I have visited the campus several times, I have never signed up for a workshop there. I've always been a little bit intimidated and also just overwhelmed by the choices of workshops. So as you can imagine, I'm very excited that along with my friend Dee, I will be taking a fiber arts workshop. It's 5 days long, and the one that we selected is kind of far-ranging, like dip your toe into a whole bunch of different things, including wet felting, different kinds of needlework, dyeing, basketry. So our hope is that there is a lot of invitation for play and experiment and innovative use of materials, since we already have some skill in a lot of these areas. We really just want to think about how to develop and maybe merge concepts. So at some future date, I will be filling you in. I'll probably be posting some photographs and commentary on my experience on Instagram. So if you follow me there, I'm Sarah Pomegranate. You can get some updates and information, but I will certainly relay some of my learning from the course, because that's the kind of thing I do here on this podcast. And that's one of the reasons why I'm recording this episode early, because I feel like I will have just enough energy to, maybe not even enough energy, to do this workshop from 9 to 5, and probably not much left over after that. But I wanted to catch you up on some things that have been on my needles. One is that I continue to work on the hashtag Outside the Socks Cowl, hosted by Joanna of Knitspin Farm. She's inviting her clients to knit with, crochet with, weave with her hand-dyed, self-striping yarn, doing things that are other than socks. And I found this great mitt pattern, which I've talked about for a couple episodes now. I've completed two pairs of fingerless mitts, adjusting the pattern just a little bit to create a mitt with a 3x1 rib. It's really delightful, worked up in Joanna's self-striping yarn, and I have just cast on a third pair, this time in the colorway More Flowers, Less Lawn, which is a lot of oranges, purples, and a little bit of green. The entire self-striping sequence is pretty complicated, so it's super fun to see how this works up. I am tending to work these mitts in tandem, meaning I have a ball of yarn that's about half a skein, since Emily and I have a practice of sharing skeins of yarn, and this very generously came from Emily. And I work one mitt from the outside of the ball and the other mitt from the inside of the ball. And I'm back using my Flexi Flips needles in US size 0 for these. As soon as I finish, I'll cast on another pair. I'm just having a lot of fun with mitts this summer. Another project that I have cast on since I recorded last is a camisole top called Holderness. It is a design by Cassie La Follette, and it's available for purchase via Ravelry. It's a Quince and Company pattern, and it's a Quince and Company yarn that I'm using. It's Kestrel, which is an organic linen tape yarn in an Erin weight that I purchased quite a few years ago on a destash. It's been sitting in my stash, and I thought it would work up really well to be a perfect summer top. The colorway is Byzantium, which is a really lovely, gorgeous purple that's right up my alley. It's like a muted purple color. And what I'm trying to do is knit this camisole in a size 4, a 37-inch bust, but I only have enough yarn to really complete the smallest size of the pattern. So I'm trying to eke out a 37-inch bust when I really have enough yarn for a 32-inch bust. So some adjustments that I have made so far are that I cast on 152 stitches. This is the cast on amount between the small and the medium size. And since the pattern is worked in the round up until a division for at the armholes, I will be able to work the back in the smallest size and the front in the medium size so that I can conserve on yarn and hopefully get a better fitting top. This is something I often do with sweaters, is that I create a back that's slightly smaller than the front, and I delineate the back from the front using a faux side seam. So this pattern is not seamed. It's knit in the round with a beautiful folded hem. But I have added a purl stitch at each side to give a more linear look. I really think it assists the structure of a sweater or camisole top. And that's why I nearly always will work this into a pattern if it's possible. I am knitting this on US size 7 needles because my gauge tends to be incredibly loose. So using 7 instead of US 8. And the pattern starts with a 4-inch folded hem, which gives a beautiful weight to this top and is a wonderful finish. I have knit a 3-inch folded hem rather than a 4-inch just to conserve a little bit on yarn. There are no sleeves. There's really no yoke to this sweater. So I think that I will be able to eke it out, and I've already located a couple of additional skeins, single skeins of this colorway on D-Stash, should I need to purchase them. But I'm very much looking forward to wearing this top. I've never knit with this type of tape linen yarn before. It's really beautifully dense and breathable. And because it has this tube-like structure, even though the yarn isn't wool, I'm not finding it too hard on my hands. I can knit for about an hour at a time without any hand fatigue. Once again, that pattern is called Holderness, and it is a design by Cassie La Follette. Another element of my making is that I am working on carding some bats using a borrowed drum carder from my friend Hope of Hope's Favorite Things. I had initially planned to use combs to work with this quarter fleece from Shepherd's Hay Farm. The sheep is Lenore. The fiber is a Romney Corriedale blend in a beautiful chocolatey dark color with just wonderful crimp. I mean, this is just gorgeous, gorgeous fleece that does warrant combing for sure. But combing is just not in the cards for me right now. It's a little too fatiguing, and I am a bit clumsy because of some neuropathy. So I don't want to have an accident with combs and really injure myself, which is a possibility. So hopefully another time I will be in possession of some fleece that will warrant combing, and I will take that opportunity to get much better with hand combs. For this little fleece, Lenore, I have completed scouring it and drying it on wonderful sunny days. And now I am working on making some bats. It will be a lot of bats because this, it's just a quarter fleece. I mean, it's just over a pound, I think, but it's just gorgeous and opens up wonderfully. And, you know, I can only put so many ounces into a bat, so it's going to be a lot of bats. I have not yet tried spinning it. I'm very much looking forward to doing that, and I think I will be using my little Louette S10 double treadle wheel to spin it up and make a fingering or perhaps a sport weight 2-ply. But that's a little ways off. First, I need to work on getting all of these bats made. I would say I'm about a quarter of the way through this cleaned fleece in terms of making bats, and very, very much enjoying it. Ever-expanding skill set. I have continued some experiments in making lino cuts and making prints. My most recent print block is kind of a story of my body's recent journey. And this time I've cut into the block, printed in a single color, and then cut in again and printed in a different color. I have fallen in love with the quality of some beautiful ink that doesn't dry very quickly or very completely. So that's kind of like a newbie thing, I guess. I found out very quickly that this ink took a long time to dry, and yet I continued using it because I love the luminous quality that it has. So I'm making some note cards, I'm making a few prints, and then I also purchased some fabric ink so that I could put this print onto some pieces of muslin and canvas as well. This is extremely gratifying work. It's very new to me. I like the repetitive nature of creating the prints and working with the ink. And I'm looking forward to putting together a little prize package for third quarter contributors to Ko-Fi. This could be supporting contributor or just a one-time contribution. If you make that contribution anytime before Saturday, September 23rd, you'll be included in the drawing. And then I'll put together a little package of these prints and send them out to the winner. I mentioned in a previous episode that the Taproot Summer Issue, issue 57, the blue issue, is filled with just incredible articles, recipes, and crafting ideas. I'm very much enjoying this issue. And one of the things I've tried recently is the recipe by Katie Farrell for a Finnish blueberry pie. I've been working on the pronunciation of the Finnish word for this blueberry pie, which is mustikapiirakka. Mustikapiirakka. And in Finland, this would be made most likely with bilberries, not blueberries. Blueberries tend to be quite a bit larger. Nevertheless, I love this recipe. I have made it twice, and then I've also done some riffing with the dough. So I'm just going to tell you all of the reasons why I love this recipe and some of the things that I've done with it. And I hope you'll take the opportunity to try it yourself. The photograph of this pie, this tart, it's a tart, in the magazine is drop-dead gorgeous. So it's very alluring and made me want to bake it right away. Katie Farrell uses ingredients in weights and measures in her recipe. I love that she includes weights in grams, especially for a recipe that I'm going to make in the summertime when flour can be kind of like saturated with humidity, etc. It's really, really helpful to have the weights as well as the amounts. And this also aids in substituting ingredients very easily because different kinds of flours will have different kinds of density, and so knowing the weight is essential. This recipe calls for all-purpose flour as well as rye flour. I didn't have any rye flour on hand. Did I let that stop me? No. No, I didn't. So I use all-purpose flour, and then instead of the rye flour, I used a little bit of buckwheat flour, which is very dark and can have a little bit of a bitter quality to it. And then I used the rest of that weight, I think it was 70 grams, with some almond flour. The crust for this recipe is not a traditional pie dough, so you don't need any pie dough making skills, like keeping everything cold, or avoiding adding too much water so you get a gluey dough that doesn't roll out or that sticks. There's no rolling out of this dough. It's something akin to a shortbread, really. You make it in a stand mixer, and then you refrigerate it until it's the perfect consistency to work with it, and then you press it into the pan. So if pies have made you a little bit nervous, this is a great recipe to start with because it's not a traditional crust. The recipe calls for a tart pan. I just assumed at the start that I didn't have one, and so I pressed my dough into a regular 8-inch pie plate. There was way too much dough for my 8-inch pie plate, so I pulled a big chunk of it off and put it back in a Ziploc bag and put it in the refrigerator. And then I worked with an amount that was more suitable for the pie plate that I used. After I had put the pie into the oven, I recalled that yes, I do have a tart pan that I had forgotten all about. So of course this meant that in very short order, I was trying the recipe again. But in between, I had that leftover dough, and I was thinking about what to do with it. And so a few days later, I rolled it out very thin and used a biscuit cutter to create cookies from this dough. They were really delicious, grown-up shortbread cookies, with a little bit of a dark color and flavor because of the buckwheat flour. And that got me thinking about riffing on the dough and maybe altering the ingredients to do something different. So a few days after that, I made the dough recipe again. I omitted the buckwheat flour and put in all-purpose flour and almond flour. I omitted cardamom from the recipe, and I put in a whole bunch of grated lemon rind. And then I rolled out this dough to make beautiful disc-shaped cookies with my biscuit cutter. And then I brushed the tops with a frothy beaten egg yolk and sprinkled it with a little turbinado sugar. They were elegant and absolutely delicious. So I think beyond the pie or the tart, there's a lot of possibility for this dough recipe. It's really a good one. As far as the filling is concerned, I love it because it's a sour cream filling. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know my affinity for Faye sour cream, a really gorgeous, thick, full fat sour cream. I love it. So over the pressed out dough, you sprinkle a whole bunch of blueberries, and then you whisk together this very simple batter. You don't need any specialty equipment or anything to do it. You pour the batter over the blueberries, and then you put more blueberries on top and bake it. This is a much better dessert in a tart pan than in a pie dish. The crust is thinner and more evenly distributed. The batter sits in the tart pan much better than in a pie plate. And so I was really happy with the second time that I made this recipe. And because of the weights and measures, I was able to make a gluten-free crust because I was having a gluten-free guest. And the buckwheat flour and the almond flour that I added were already gluten-free. And then I used a product called Measure for Measure that I used to replace all-purpose flour in a recipe. It came out great. I don't have an 11-inch tart pan. I only have an 8-inch tart pan. And so I still had really more dough for the crust than was warranted. So again, I broke off a big piece and stored it in the refrigerator so that I can roll it out and make some cookies again in a day or two. So this is just an absolutely beautiful, well-formulated recipe with a lot of possibilities. I haven't even thought of subbing out the different kinds of fruit, perhaps. But I think it's versatile and a really reliable recipe. So great for Taproot issue 57 and for Katie Farrell, who did the work on the recipe. One thing that I've been enjoying a lot recently is a puzzle that was sent to me by Emily and her family that is done up like an Advent puzzle. I had heard about this on a few different podcasts around the holidays, and then I sort of forgot about it. And then I was the lucky recipient of a very special package with 24 individual bags of puzzle pieces. It's a great way to put together a very large or very complicated puzzle because essentially you're making 24 little puzzles and these bite-sized pieces. So you dump out the pieces and you know they all go together. And then you just create chunks of this puzzle and hook them together into the whole. It's a lot of fun. For me, doing a puzzle solo, because I'm really the only person who's enjoying puzzles in my house, it helps me do a puzzle a lot more quickly, and I don't have to have this table with all of the pieces spread out for a very long time until I get the puzzle done. So it makes puzzle making a lot more fun for me. And since I've enjoyed it so much, I had the idea of doing an Advent puzzle exchange. I'm talking about this now in July because the Advent puzzle exchange will first require you to make the puzzle that you're going to share and ship away to your Advent partner. And an ideal time to do that could be now during summer. Lots of people bring puzzles on a family vacation or maybe have one out in a lake home or something like that. Or keep one going if where you are is like super hot and you tend to stay inside with some air conditioning and a puzzle. Now would be an ideal time to decide on a puzzle that you want to make and to make it so that you can take it apart in a very specific way and create an Advent puzzle. I will have a lot more information about this in episode 315, my next episode, which will be a small episode, very specific about the Advent puzzle exchange. And it will come out in early to mid-August. With that episode, there will also be a Google sign-up link. So if you want to participate in an Advent exchange, you can listen to the episode, see what it's all about, all the details, and then sign up. For now, if you think you're interested, the thing to do would be to decide on a puzzle you wouldn't mind sending away and make the puzzle, either on your own or maybe with some friends. The size doesn't necessarily matter. I will have options for a 500 piece, a 1,000 piece. I guess a lot less popular is like a 750, but that's also a possibility. So somewhere in there, I will also start a thread in Ravelry in the Yarns at Yinhu group, which has been pretty inactive. But if you have questions or you want to chat about this puzzle exchange, this would be a great place to do that. And it would also give me an idea about questions you have or what you're wondering about. So when I put that special episode together, I am sure to address any questions or concerns that you have. I'm looking forward to this. I plan to participate, and I hope you will consider it. And I look forward to hearing more from you about this and sharing some information in my next very short episode. Thanks so much. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week that is full of the crafting you enjoy.